From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Christopher McDougall is quick to point out he wasn't the first person to question the ideas behind the running shoe industry. But it does seem clear his best-selling book, Born to Run, helped change the way people think about running. It wasn't so long ago that shoe companies were creating shoes with microprocessors and gel pods and midfoot thrust enhancers. Nowadays, the trend is toward minimalist footwear with simple structure and thin soles. One type even looks like a foot glove. And more runners are shedding the shoes altogether. Today in the program, he'll join us to talk about the phenomenon he helped get started. We'll talk about his stories and the techniques he's learned to get the human foot back in line with nature. Join us after the news. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. When Christopher McDougall published his book, Born to Run, a few years ago, something caught on. It's hard to pinpoint exactly what that thing is or was. The book challenged everything we thought we knew about running, questioned the ideas behind the multi-million-dollar running shoe industry. But McDougall has pointed out he wasn't the first to write about these things. So why did the book and the idea of running barefoot, for example, become such a phenomenon? It may have been the stories. The book, of course, was built around extraordinary stories, the stories of the Tarahumara Indians and their gift and passion for running, the story of a mysterious figure named Caballo Blanco who lived a Spartan existence and ran miles and miles just for the sheer joy of it. It was also a personal book about McDougall's own experiences as a writer and a runner. We had Christopher McDougall on the program when the book first came out, and now we're having him back. We're talking about the lessons he's learned along the way. Christopher McDougall, of course, a journalist, author. He's worked as a contributing editor for Men's Health, as a war correspondent for the Associated Press. His articles have appeared in Esquire, The New York Times, other magazines. His book, again, is called Born to Run, A Hidden Tribe Super Athletes in the Greatest Race the World Has Never Seen. Christopher McDougall, welcome back. Thanks for being with us.
It's a delight to be here.
Well, I wanted to start by asking you that question I was kind of raising there in the introduction, and that is, what do you think it was that caught on? I mean, the book, as you talked about the fact that, you know, people had talked about barefoot running before. They had talked about the evolutionary nature about all of that. So how is it that the book became such a bestseller and such a phenomenon, do you think?
You know what I've learned over the past year is that it's only in our lifetime that running has become associated with fear and pain and injury. You know, throughout antiquity, folklore, mythology, history, running has always been associated with playfulness, youthfulness, eternal youth, adventure. And yet, in our culture, you tell someone you run, they talk about you're going to hurt your knees, you're going to hurt your feet, you need special shoes, you're going to get hurt. And I think what really caught people's imaginations was this is one of the only times you read about running where it's an adventure. It's fun. And the people doing it are having a blast. They're running 150 miles at a time. And yet it's playful. And that's what I think really ignited people's interest.
Because we've been afraid, right?
We've been afraid. Fear is the greatest marketing tool of all time. You tell people they're going to get hurt, they will pay you money to not feel afraid. I'm Sicilian by ancestry. We've been practicing this for thousands of years. We're the experts. So what happened, unfortunately, I think, with running, which is our greatest natural legacy, is that we told people, well, if you don't get these products, you're going to get hurt. You know, you need special shoes. You need a Garmin. You need a training program. You got to get this magazine. You're going to get hurt. You're going to get hurt. People get afraid.
How do you figure your life has changed since the book? And did you expect it to take off like this?
It's a hard question to answer humbly because anytime you put a word down on a piece of paper, you're expecting that there's going to be laurel leaves, you know, dropping from the ceiling on you.
But you were excited about the book. I mean, let's talk about just the days before you published it. I mean, you knew there was something here that was going to catch on. Right?
I used to come into the house. I have a little cabin behind the house. I would come into the house at midnight, like wake up my wife and say, if this book sucks, it's my fault. You know, there is no one else to blame because the material is unbelievable. Yeah. And I had this sort of like trembly sense of anticipation, like this could be the greatest book ever written about the most popular sport in the world. This is not arrogance. This is just like, you know, you dig in the backyard and there's a pot of gold there. And that's what I felt I was sitting on.
I wanted to ask you about the fact that Okay, you're a journalist and you're a runner, and there's this kind of combination about the way I'm wondering if you feel this way. You're kind of perceived as Christopher McDougall now as the spokesman for barefoot running.
Right.
Are you comfortable with that?
It's difficult because in a lot of ways I feel that the conversation has gone off the rails. It's really not about what you wear on your feet. It's not about barefoot running. It's about running technique.
Yeah.
And that's what really has caused the problem for the past 40 years. It's we've tried to use technology as a substitute for technique. And so whether you're running your bare feet or you can run a pair of ski boots, but as long as you're landing properly and gently, it doesn't matter. But where the conversation has gotten, I think, distorted is it's become this argument between whether you should or should not wear shoes at all. That's not the conversation. The conversation is there proper running technique? Now, where I feel a certain amount of discomfort is I'm still a student. I'm by no means a sensei here.
You don't have the answers.
I don't have the answers. I feel like I am doing it properly myself. I've not missed a day of running because of an injury since I learned how to run properly. Compare that to my previous experience where I was missing it. First of all, I didn't like running. Yeah. And when doctors told me I couldn't run, it's like, oh, gee, no more proctology exams, no more punches in the face. Gee, what a pity. So I was happy to give up running. But they always told me, if you keep running, you're going to get hurt. And since learning how to run properly, and I feel barefoot, then it's gone away.
Yeah. I wonder if – what was the response? I mean, we talked a little bit about this when you were here a couple of years ago, but I wonder and I'm not going to ask you to suggest if you think there was some overwhelming negative reaction because there's so much money invested in all of this, but I do have to wonder – because there was some criticism, some suggestion that this is just a fad and he doesn't have the science behind him, although it seems like more and more science does seem to be on your side. But I wonder if you were sort of braced yourself for the reaction and if you did get it, that something you thought.
I was certainly braced for it. I was waiting for the artillery to come firing from Beaverton, Oregon. And what I found actually initially was a surprise, which was an unbelievable silence. I mean, I say in this book that running shoes are the most harmful product to ever touch the human foot. Millions of people are injured every year wearing running shoes, and there is absolutely no science that these prescriptive corrective devices actually do anything. You mentioned the science has been coming out. In the past year, some of the studies have been astonishing, some of them by the U.S. military, some by printed in the British Journal of Sports Medicine, the American Journal of Sports Medicine, all pointing directly to a correlation between running shoes and running injuries. But yet what I found from the running shoe companies, despite all this, is they don't say a word. And then I realized why. It's because they're not in the business of arguing with like mouthy journalists. They're in the business of selling shoes. You tell them you want shoes that taste like strawberry, they'll sell you strawberry shoes. You tell them you want barefoot shoes, they'll sell barefoot shoes. The problem has been that once again, we're going down the same road because they're just shoving a product out the door. And what nobody is doing, or very few people are doing, is focusing on running technique.
So if I were to go into a running store in 2008, compare that to the running store that I would go into now. Are these ideas of barefoot running, some of the ideas that come from your book and other places, are they reflected on the shelves?
You're very lucky because you're in Salt Lake. And right down the road in Orem, Utah, there's a store called A Runner's Corner, run by a guy named Hawk Harper. You couldn't dream up a Hawk Harper if you wanted to. His son's name is Golden Harper. I met them 2 years ago, shortly after the book came out, and they zoomed up to me and said, we've been talking about this for years. In our running shoe store, where we sell running shoes, we're sawing the heels off of some shoes for people. That is one of the stores. There's another one called Playmakers Performance in Okemos, Michigan. There are a few stores around the country where they teach good form running classes. They teach you how to use the shoes and then give you a selection. However, they're few and far between. I still walk in the stores all the time, and I can't believe they're still doing the same thing where they put you on the treadmill and they say you're overpronating, you need a motion control shoe or you need a stability shoe. It's such an archaic and useless practice, and yet a lot of stores are still doing it.
So you're still there's resistance still to the idea.
Yeah, I mean,
But that's strange. Don't you think there would be people that wouldn't they adapt to this idea? I mean, they can still sell things to cover your feet, right? I mean,
I wrote an article about a year or so ago, where I said, look, I think specialty stores, no matter what they are, bookstores, running shoe stores, they have to understand that their commodity is expertise. They're not moving a product. They are selling their expertise in a field. So if you go into a running shoe store And again, I've seen this happen. They still have like these big motion controlling shoes on the shelves. You can have it there, but you have to have the credentials as a reliable source of information. And so I think the people that are resisting, it's a deadly little corner they've wedged themselves into.
One thing that's interesting, I like how you've said that you're not into you don't want a battle, you want a conversation.
Correct. Yeah.
Explain what you mean. I mean, you don't want to undo the running shoe industry necessarily. You want people to start having this conversation to think about all of this.
Oh, I'm not sure. I'm not so sure I wouldn't want to undo the running shoe industry. I think they've caused a heck of a lot of harm. I mean, this morning, I live in Amish farm country, and this morning I read this story that the FDA carried out a sting on an Amish farmer who sells raw milk to people. And like, you know, for God's sakes, millions of people are injured every year by these shoes. You pick up any issue of Runner's World, the current issue of Runner's World has got all these shoe reviews that are of products that I believe are actually hurting people. So you want to investigate something, leave the Amish farmer alone, go out to the shoe companies. But as far as the conversation is concerned, what I have found fascinating is that some of the top researchers, there is Dr. Daniel Lieberman at Harvard, Dr. Irene Davis, who was at University of Delaware, now at Harvard. They are biomechanists and anthropologists who are studying this very question. And what I find so fascinating is they become barefoot runners themselves. These are objective scientists. And they say, you know, you follow where the research goes, it's hard to find a different conclusion. But what's so cool about it is you put them on stage and they want to share. And that's what I think is interesting. Get the experts out there to share what they know.
I wanted to ask you about Dr. Davis because there was a point over the last year or so when you had this, you know, this question comes up about whether or not should you run, you know, barefoot or should you change the shoe? And so you came and you asked her this. You said, okay, so, we can change the shoe. We can make it so, and we can acknowledge the sort of evolutionary realities of our feet. But that doesn't necessarily mean we have to be barefoot, right? And she seemed to say, look, there are nerve endings in your feet.
Right.
That you shouldn't cover that up. I mean, she's completely into this barefoot idea, and I wanted you to talk about that because she talked about the importance of having a kind of sensitivity and awareness with your foot of the environment almost.
Right. This is, I think, the only time someone has outgunned me on the extremist front. So Dr. Irene Davis, I've had an interesting history with her because I went to see her back in 2005 before I even went down to the Copper Canyons because I was doing an article for the New York Times about this new shoe that had come out, the Nike Free, which is supposed to simulate barefoot running. So I went to see Dr. Davis, who was running the running injury clinic at the University of Delaware. And essentially what she told me then was that, look, you know, there is no magic bullet. People get hurt running. We're not quite sure why. And the shoe technology doesn't seem to be making a difference, although she didn't seem to suggest barefoot running as an antidote. And then after that interview with her, one of her patients came in with plantar fasciitis with chronic heel pain.
Yeah.
And he says, hey, I want to wear this Nike Free barefoot shoe. And she's like, that is the last thing you should be putting on your foot. You have heel pain. You need more cushioning. He did it anyway. Heel pain disappeared. So she starts to question. When I say we should have a conversation, it's because of these kind of situations. She's a top person in the field. She's not sure. Subsequently, she started to do testing and research, and she came around to believe the exact opposite of what she'd believed for 40 years, which is that maybe barefoot is the way to go. Then when I saw her after the book came out, again, I'm still not quite sure where I sit on this.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
My belief is that, look, you can wear whatever you want as long as your technique is right. And she said, listen, you know, nature just doesn't dole out nerve endings willy-nilly. Your foot has as many nerve endings in it as you have in your fingertips or lips or genitals. They're not there by accident. They're there for a reason. They're there to tell you a lot about the surface and the balance and the posture and heat and differences in terrain. So the more you cover up that sensory input, it's like putting a blindfold on.
So she put you on a treadmill.
Yeah.
With the three shoes. You did the Vibram 5, what are they called? Five?
Vibram 5 fingers.
Five fingers.
Barefoot.
You went barefoot, and then you went with a Nike.
Yeah, yeah.
What were they called?
The Nike Free.
The Nike Free. Just talk about what it was like.
So it was fascinating. At the time that she and I had this conversation, I think I had been running almost exclusively barefoot for more than a year at that point because I had that own personal revelation. I thought, man, the more I run barefoot, the better my running form is.
Yeah.
And every time I put a shoe on, I seem to regress a little. So I'd run on asphalt for about a year, never wearing a shoe. So Dr. Davis brings me into her clinic, and she wants to look at a couple different things, primarily impact peaks. Do I hit the ground harder or more softly, depending on which shoes on my foot. So she puts me on a force reaction treadmill. First, I am barefoot. Then I'm in the Vibram 5 fingers, the foot glove.
Right.
And then she has me put on the Nike Free 3.0, which is the most minimal shoe Nike offers.
Super light.
Super light. I put this on my feet, and the first thing I notice is, oh, my God, I feel like I'm on a big pillow. I couldn't sense where my foot was making contact with the treadmill.
Now, even though the sole is super, super thin.
Super thin. So I even took the shoe off. I took out the insole.
Right.
Put it back on, and I still felt like I was swimming around. I thought, man, this is really surprising to me. And what I think it was just that blindfold sensation.
So this is that idea of ground awareness, right?
Yeah, right. What you learn right off the bat is that the skin of your foot can send messages all the way up your spinal column, giving you input on exactly how your body is aligned, not just your foot, but your entire body is aligned with the ground. And once you remove that, suddenly you're not quite sure, is my posture up? Am I leaning forward? Am I leaning backwards? It's pretty amazing. I mean, I really encourage people just to try this experiment. Go out for a jog barefoot, carry your shoes in your hand, run 20 feet, 30 feet, then put your shoes on and then run. And I guarantee you those first 20 strides in your shoes will feel totally different.
You know, it's interesting. I think about times, for example, when I've been with my kids wading in a stream. And you take your shoes off, right? And then you sort of you're uneasy and you feel like it kind of hurts. I mean, I always think it just seems so unnatural in some ways to be barefoot that you're going to get hurt. So I guess the question is, how long does it take you to acclimate to this? I mean, because one of the things that I wanted to ask you about, you know, you have people in countries where they go barefoot all the time.
Right.
I mean, they grow up that way. And that the idea of running and being barefoot in adolescence seems important to the development of your foot.
Right.
But what happens to those of us who grow up with shoes?
It's fascinating, too. The guy who coached me, the guy who really brought me back from the dead, is a guy named Eric Orton. He's a coach up in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. And he talks about it. He's got a 5-year-old daughter. He said, you know, you watch kids, the first 3 years of their lives, they have really great shoes available to them, these like soft little moccasins. Then they turn around 3 or 4, and the only shoe you can get is like the Dora the Explorer sneaker with the light up heel that, you know, that
right.
lights up every time the heel strikes. And he goes, from that point on, from age 3 on, their feet are confined. But you watch a 2-year-old, 3-year-old moving around, they have no trouble going barefoot. They like it. So as far as the acclimation process is concerned, again, that's where those nerve endings are excellent, because a lot of people who set out to learn how to run barefoot, if they go truly barefoot, their feet are going to tell them pretty darn quick when it's time to back off, because it's going to feel uncomfortable. The difficulty I think people get into is they still want a product. So they'll buy the Nike Free or the Vibram 5 fingers and consider that barefoot, and it's not. So they can do too much too soon. But you go fully barefoot, you know, the pain in that foot will say, you know something, maybe it's time to rest for today and try again tomorrow.
I have to say, Christopher, you are more resolute now than you were 2 years ago. I mean, you seem more determined. You're more more convinced.
I am really glad that I wrote the book then and not now, because I wrote it in a period of questioning and exploring. And I warn people too. Sometimes people ask me a question, I'll say, listen, I got to let you know right now, I've become a little foamy mouthed about this. And I've become kind of a true believer in form. So take it with a grain of salt, because I'm one of those guys who will not hear any other answer. So I'm glad that at the time I wrote the book, I was still really questioning and not certain. And I think it made it much more of a conversation as opposed to now, where the Sicilian blood comes out and I just want to bludgeon people into my point of view.
Christopher McDougall is with us. He's the author of the book Born to Run, A Hidden Tribe, Super Athletes, and the Greatest Race the World Has Never Seen. We'll take a brief break. Back in a moment. This is Radio West on KUER and Sirius XM Public Radio. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Back now with the journalist Christopher McDougall. We're talking about the follow-up, really, in some ways, to his book, best-selling book, Born to Run. All right, let's go to the phones. Xavier is joining us in Salt Lake City. Xavier, welcome.
Hi, how's it going?
Fine, thanks.
Good, good. I was calling with some comments I read Mr. McDougall's book, and I thoroughly enjoyed it, and I have since become a converted barefoot runner. And just wanted to comment that one of my major issues while running with shoes had been that I could only go about 6 or 7 miles before my lower back would start to hurt me too much, and I pretty much had to stop. And now I'm training for a marathon. I completed a half marathon and do so completely barefoot.
Fantastic, Xavier. You know, your experience was exactly akin to Barefoot Ted, one of the guys I write about in the book, who wanted to do his like Renaissance triathlon using only technology from like the 1800s, but he couldn't find a running shoe, so he got rid of them, and next thing you know, he's doing ultras.
Yep, it was after I read your book and you had commented, I saw a thing on Real Sports with you, and you had talked about knee troubles, and I was like, well, if it helped his knees, it could probably help my back. And sure enough, just after a few weeks, my feet were acclimated, and I've tried to turn many of my running friends onto running barefoot, or at least trying the Vibram so they can have some sort of coverage. But I very much like your book and have sent it to many friends and wanted to thank you for writing it.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks a lot, Xavier.
Xavier, thanks for the call. Cheers.
No problem. Thank you.
Mark is with us in American Fork. Mark, hi.
Hi. I'm wondering about road debris and, you know, small rocks. You can't avoid that. I just wonder what that feels like when you land squarely on a small pebble on your heel.
Really, really bad. Really bad, Mark. But you know what's fascinating about running barefoot or minimally is that you make a major and I think crucial change in form. When you run in shoes, 85% of all shod runners land on their heel with their leg extended in front of them. You run barefoot, your foot is directly beneath your center of balance. So essentially, it's like balancing on one foot at a time. I've never hurt the bottom of my foot. I've occasionally stepped on a rock and wished I hadn't.
Yeah.
But I've never cut myself, bruised myself, or anything because you have way more balance and range of motion, and you also have more lead time. You see something, you just skip around it.
And are you more aware because you have more ground awareness with all these nerve endings? I mean, because, you know, we ran for centuries and centuries and millennia, really, in our bare feet as a species.
Absolutely. Again, I'm not saying never wear anything on your foot. The problem with shoes is not protection. A little bit of protection is a great thing. The problem was when we got into the field of correction, when we tried to sort of trump what nature had given us. The Tatamata wear sandals. They're a fabulous thing. But yes, it's really helpful. When you actually step on a rock, your foot will naturally sort of flinch away before it actually makes any harm.
Mark, glad you called. Back to the phones. Tim with us in Saratoga Springs.
How do you do?
Hi. Welcome.
Well, I'm a foaming-at-the-mouth barefoot convert, but I'm not a runner. I'm 6'3", 285 pounds. But I've been going barefoot for about 2.5 years. I bought a pair of Vibram barefoot shoes. And after about 3 months of misery, I really haven't experienced since then any foot pain, ankle pain, knee pain, hip pain, back pain, all of which I experienced fairly frequently before that. And I credit it to my just being much more aware of the communications with the lower part of my body.
It is amazing what it does for your balance. You watch a toddler.
For your balance?
Your balance. You watch how kids are, and you notice how they're really erect. They really have this straight back when they run. And what happens is just that is that the second you take your shoes off, you instantly straighten your back.
Wow. Well, good luck. Thanks very much for the call. It's interesting. You talk about this in the book, about this kind of sense among the sort of the traditional podiatric thinking that saw the human foot forever as nature's mistake.
Yeah.
That it's kind of needed something to help. And so I wanted you to talk about – there was this book. This idea was expressed in this book called The Runner's Repair Manual, which was this huge bestseller. Talk about that. What was the idea behind it, that our feet – that we weren't really evolved, in fact, to run, to walk?
Yeah, I could bang my head against the wall sometimes. Even more recently than that, there was an article in the New York Times where they interviewed a biomechanist named Ben Onig, who's probably the leading authority and the leading consultant to the running shoe industry. And Ben Onig actually did a study on orthotics, which are prescribed by the hundreds of thousands every year. And he said, actually, we studied it, and we don't really see any evidence that orthotics do anything. They cost you $400, you wear them for life, but they don't do anything. But then he drops this bombshell. He says, well, actually, you know, the human foot has an arch, and it's really sort of an anthropological leftover. We don't really need it. It's back from our days climbing trees, and it was used for grasping. And I actually called Dr. Lieberman about this, who's head of evolutionary anthropology at Harvard. And he was like, that is the most absurd thing I've ever heard in my life. The arch is a fantastic load-bearing device. Chimpanzees who do climb trees don't have an arch. Humans do. So the difficulty, I have to say, with a lot of the so-called foot expertise is that they come with this notion that we're born broken. And in that case, how on earth did we survive for 2 million years before the modern running shoe or any kind of orthotic was created 30 years ago?
So what was the foot evolved to do? What are our feet looking for? We're looking for something stable. We're trying to stabilize ourselves. I mean, how does it work?
Well, the best explanation I heard was that, and this came from Dr. Lieberman, is imagine the body almost like a vertical golf ball, that our bodies from head to toe are loaded up with elastic recoil tendons. We're great springy devices. And so what your foot is really looking for is a nice, stable pogo stick pose.
Something to spring off of.
Exactly. Right. And Dr. Nicholas Romanoff, who created a running method called the pose method, said that really all running is falling forward. We're using letting gravity pull us forward. It's just spring along. But if you watch, there's a 10-second clip I've got on my website of the finish of the Boston Marathon. These guys are running a sub-204 marathon.
Wow.
And you watch them, it's effortless. And all they're doing is just springing forward.
Here's an email from Rand, who writes, what about running in winter and the snow? What does a runner do with frigid conditions, runners in frigid or alpine environments? And we're getting a number of questions like that. This
sure.
comes up, trail running, those kinds of things.
Yeah. Again, there's nothing wrong with protection. So protect your foot from the elements from rocky trails. The problem is correction. So what I suggest to people is, look, take some time to get your technique hardwired. Once you're running properly, come winter, put some protection on your feet. But look for protection that's not going to impede the way your foot wants to move. So go with the most minimal shoe you can find. Nice thick wool sock. You're good to go.
I like how you write that it was the more expensive the shoe, the worse it was for you.
Yeah, that was a study out of Switzerland where they accounted for every variable, size, gender, weight, injury, history, everything. And when they compared injury rates, they found that the runners who had the more expensive shoes were twice as likely to be injured as the runners in the cheap shoes.
Let's go back to the phones. Let's see. Heidi's with us in Sandy. Heidi, hi.
Hi.
Welcome. Go ahead.
So I had a question about running barefoot and shin splints, because I was a sprinter in high school and would get shin splints so easily, and I still do now. But if I run on softer surfaces, they don't get as bad as when I'm running on harder surfaces. So I've been kind of following the barefoot trend for like a year now. So I'm wondering if you run barefoot, then you're running on a harder surface. So how does that affect shin splints?
You've got to hear about shin splints all the time.
All the time. And I get thousands of emails all the time. When you say you've been following the barefoot trend, you mean following it from a distance, or you've actually been experimenting?
I watched your 60 minutes. So I've been kind of listening to what you were saying, and I've been wanting to ask you this question for a long time.
Well, excellent. Listen, we have time in the show. Here's what I want you to do. Could you just take your shoes off, run around the block, and then call back? I'm not kidding.
Right.
I had someone do that on a show one time. They ran around the block, and they came back, and they said, oh, my God, this feels so good. Rather than be – I understand why people are cautious. Let me get back to you. Actually, your key question was about shin splints. Shin splints are usually caused by people whose bodies are jackknifed forward from the waist. And it happens a lot with sprinters because they're trying to go forward as fast as possible. And a lot of times they just basically bend forward. And what your shins are trying to do is to keep you from toppling over. The muscles in the front of your leg are trying to create stability. So they're firing, trying to stop you from flipping forward. And that's
so it's the running technique.
It's all about technique.
Right. Technique, then you wouldn't get shin.
Okay, Heidi, so we've got time. Are you game to try? It's good weather out there in Sandy.
You know what? I would, but I got a baby, so
okay.
I'm not sure. I'd go jogging with the baby, otherwise I would.
All right. Maybe we'll try to find someone else. Heidi, glad you called. Thanks.
Okay,
so here's an email from Neil who writes, my chiropractor said that most of the running done in your book was on dirt. He felt that the barefoot running on asphalt or cement is still causing foot injuries. You hear this as well a lot.
I do hear this. And again, you hear it usually from chiropractors, podiatrists. And I just keep saying, guys, you know what? If you're experts in your field, go run around the block. Before you tell people your opinion on barefoot running, why don't you try running barefoot a little bit? It's a real misconception that the natural world is this Shangri-La of AstroTurf. The real world is really hard. The Copper Canyons which is what I write about, is all stone. The African savanna is sun-baked clay, hard as cement. Actually, if you're trying to run something to death, you want to be on a hard surface, not a soft surface, because you get more of that elastic recoil. So no, asphalt is perfectly fine.
An email from Christy writes, I went into a local running store to buy some Vibram 5 Fingers early last year. They just had a big shipment of them arrive. I tried some on, ran a little around the store. The salesman started warning me those shoes are absolutely not for running. Why were they selling them in the running store if they weren't for running? I just laughed, bought them anyway, and immediately went for a run. So I'm guessing that – do you hear that as well? That, look, there, you've got to have something that – I mean, again,
support.
Still this resistance.
You need support. You need cushioning. You need this. You need that. Yes, and again, I think this is the real danger that we're getting into is that, again, it becomes about the product, not about the technique. I would love if every running shoe store offered a good form running class and then allow people to make an informed choice.
Back to the phone. Scott with us in Springville, Utah. Scott, welcome to the program.
Hi. I think it's cool you're saying you can wear, you know, have protection and you don't have to be completely barefoot. But then again, I liked what you said from Dr. Davis, that you should have your nerves exposed so you can sense better. But then I had some concerns, real concerns about being completely barefoot so frequently. When I was 16, I went barefoot for a whole summer. I don't know why, just crazy 16-year-old. But my feet, that summer, I got plantar warts. And I tell you, having them removed was one of the most painful things I've ever felt. But in addition to that, I understand you can also get some parasites, such as hookworms, which in many places of the world are not uncommon, and they enter your body through the soles of your feet or any skin contact with the ground, and they can cause real problems. And so those are some of the fears that come to mind.
The fear again, right?
Yeah. That's true. And I have to say, I don't know enough about bacteria and viruses. I would say that compared to most of the world, the U.S. is pretty stinking clean. So I think your risks are pretty minimal.
Well, in fact, one story, there's a series that's been on Animal Planet called Monsters Inside Me or something like that. It's all about parasites. The one that they did on the parasite, I forget what it was called, but it was one that enters through the bottom of the foot, was a guy in New Jersey. And he'd realized that it happened the one time he went barefoot walking to his mailbox because he usually wears shoes.
All right. Scott's concern, though, is a reflection that you have to hear all the time. People, we freak out a little bit by the idea. Why are we so weirded out about being barefoot? I mean, yeah, you could get hookworm, I'm sure. Scott, maybe you should just cover your feet, but... But what's that about? What
I
do
think you set me up for a New Jersey joke.
right.
Again, I don't know what to say. People around the world go barefoot all the time, and the incidences of parasites entering the body are the same as like getting struck by lightning. I can't say that with authority because I don't really know, but it's almost nothing you ever hear about.
Well, we're glad you called. Thanks very much. We should take a break. I want to mention that Christopher McDougall, he's the author of the book Born to Run, A Hidden Tribe, Super Athletes, and the Greatest Race the World Has Never Seen, which more than just about running technique is about these terrific, terrific stories. We'll take a brief break. Back in a moment. This is Radio West on KUER and Sirius XM Public Radio. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. When Christopher McDougall's book, Born to Run, first came out a few years ago, the idea of barefoot running seemed like a whimsical novelty. Fact is, it's now become a full-on phenomenon. And today in the program, McDougall is back with us to talk about the trend he helped touch off. His book, of course, Born to Run, A Hidden Tribe, Super Athletes, and the Greatest Race the World Has Never Seen. So, Christopher McDougall, track for us, if you would, when did the modern athletic shoe first sort of come on the scene?
It was in the 1970s. And what's so fascinating about that is, so in the 1970s, you have Bill Bowerman, who was the coach of the University of Oregon, powerhouse team. And he was also a relentless tinkerer. And he had this idea.
But not much of a runner.
No, he didn't run himself.
Yeah.
He only started running, actually, when he went to New Zealand and bumped into Arthur Lydiard. And at that point, he was in totally awful shape. But he came back. And what Lydiard had done in New Zealand was pretty fascinating. He took a bunch of heart attack survivors and got them out on Sunday mornings for what he called the Auckland Running Party. And he had all these cardiac survivors, and he had them go out running. And at that time, there was no jogging. There was no running phenomenon worldwide. So Lydia got these guys, and their doctors are all telling them, fellas, you're going to drop over clutching your chest. And it said the exact opposite. They're losing weight. Their heart rates are increasing, improving. Everything's great. Then their family started to come out with them. So when Bowerman shows up to visit Lydiard, he sees not just track athletes, but hundreds of people of all types going out for Sunday morning runs. He comes back to the U.S. He writes a book called Jogging, and then he creates the first modern running shoe. Bowerman's idea was, you know, if everybody's laying on their forefoot with a short stride, well, what if they land on their heel with a longer stride? Then they can actually run faster.
So he was seeing them run on their forefoot?
Everybody did. There's a book by Fred Wilt called How They Train, where he checked all the great track athletes that he could find, hundreds of them. And one of the paragraphs in his book is, every runner runs essentially the same way. They are running on their forefoot, landing underneath their hips. So Bowerman thought he could outthink this and get a little bit longer, get a little bit of heel cushion.
Wow.
And the heel cushion gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and it takes over. But here's what's been so cool. So all the researchers now who are trying to compare running injuries of today versus prior to the creation of the modern running shoe, there's no data. There is no data on running injuries prior to the 1970s. So what that basically tells you is we've created a medicine before there was any ailments. And if running injuries must have been so insignificant that no one even bothered to check them before.
I want to ask you about Nike, because you tell the story, it was spring of 2001. And you talk about how Nike reps were at the Stanford University track team practice. And
correct.
they're watching this.
Right.
And I have to say, in some ways, it's kind of an indictment of Nike, because they knew about all of this. And I want you to tell the story. They're watching the Stanford coach, Vin Lenana. Is that the name?
That's correct. Yeah. I've actually got an even worse indictment of Nike, too, because last year, a major study, which was published by the British Journal of Sports Medicine, co-authored by Gordon Valiant, who's a top Nike researcher, basically said that the whole paradigm for prescribing shoes is erroneous, doesn't work. What they found is when they took a group of about 100 women who are training for a half marathon, they put a certain proportion, they put them into the shoes they were supposed to have, and the women who were in the shoes they were supposed to have, motion control or stability, were at a much greater risk of injury than women who were issued a shoe at random. And every single woman who wore a motion-controlling shoe got injured. So this is a study co-authored by Nike researchers.
So they know this stuff.
They know this stuff. And people ask me, they say, you know, you're worried about a lawsuit? I'm like, again, I don't want to tempt the faith, but in some ways I'm like, yeah, actually, I'd be interested in a lawsuit because they got to open their books. You know, what did they know?
And when
did they know it? What you referred to in 2000 was when some Nike sales reps were visiting Stanford University, where the then coach, Vin Lenana, who, by the way, is now at the University of Oregon, they're watching his runners. This is a Nike-sponsored team, and the runners are running up and down the infield barefoot. And Lenana said, look, I can't prove this, but it seems to me when my runners train barefoot, they go faster and have less risk of injury.
Let's go back to the phones. Martha is with us in Salt Lake. Martha, hi.
Hi, I have a question. Thanks for taking my call. I was walking across the street in Boston in 1978 and was hit by a car. And they told me that I could never run again, don't walk further than I had to. It hit me in the knee. And I just got a knee replacement, and I'm having a really hard time on my uninjured knee with plantar fasciitis. And I'm wondering, what about, you know, walking barefoot? Same theory?
You know, Martha, you're lucky that you're in Boston, because Dr. Irene Davis is there now at her clinic.
Well, see, I'm in Salt Lake now. That's where I was hit by the car, in Boston.
Okay, well, stay out of Boston. Then you're still lucky. You're still lucky because you've got Runner's Corner in Orem. I have no connection. I'm just very impressed by what they do.
Okay.
If I were you, I would go down there post haste, go see Golden, and get some advice from him. Running and walking are two distinct activities. Running is a series of jumps. Walking is shifting of body weight from side to side. So those are two distinct motions. But I encourage you to go to the people who deal with this every day, have them take a look at you, and hopefully they can guide you to a real nice, efficient technique.
So, are you promoting walking also barefoot?
I am, yeah. I think anything where you get more response from the ground is a good thing. But again, it's a question about protection. If it's a cold day, if you're on gravel path, get some protection for your foot. But sure, barefoot is always the way to go, if possible.
Huh. I grew up with Joni Benoit, you know, so I used to get those nice free Nikes.
Thanks, Martha.
All right, thank you.
This is even more free.
I remember you saying in the book that that's in the title. I mean, we're born to run, but you find so many people who hate it.
Yes, exactly. And Dr. Dennis Bramble here at the University of Utah, I posed that exact same question to him. And he says, think about this. You have a body that is designed for motion, but you have a brain that is out there to conserve energy at all costs. So for most of our existence, that was actually a pretty good relationship, because you don't want to have just run 20 miles when it's now time to go chase your food or run away from an attack. The problem now is we have so many motion-saving devices that the brain is winning out in the argument. On top of that, we've added this layer of fear, so people are not only not inclined to move, but afraid of it.
Back to the phones. Dan is with us in Salt Lake. Dan, hi.
How you doing?
Fine, thanks.
Thanks for taking my call. And I, you know, I'm another convert, like so many out there, I guess. And, you know, I have also looked at the form issue, and I read Qi Running and took some classes. And so, in reading that book, the running motion just got to me. It was like a golf swing. There's so many components and so many, at least in the Qi method. And I'm just wondering, what is the right method out there? What do you suggest that I look at?
Yeah, that is the key question. And you're absolutely right. I don't think that, as far as I've seen, that the technique translates itself very well to language. You're right about Qi Running and the pose method. I've read those books. I admire the two founders, but I can't make heads or tails out of their books. I can't figure out
the technique. Because it seems so complicated.
Well, it's a little thing. Like, for instance, in Qi Running, they say lean forward from the ankles. I guarantee you, if you give that instruction to 10 people, you're going to see 10 different interpretations of what it means to lean forward from the ankles. At least half the people will be bending over, looking down at their ankles to see whether or not they're leaning, which is the exact opposite of what they want you to do. So I think that's where running barefoot really comes into play.
Well, you say this. You say, let the foot do what it wants to do.
Exactly. There you go. And that's the big starting point. Rather than try to send the messages from the brain down to the feet, get the messages from the feet up to the brain.
Huh. You also talk about purchase, about the sort of the point of impact, so the idea is to lift the foot as quickly as possible, the sense of gravity, right?
Yeah. Yeah. The more time you're in the air, the better.
Right.
So what you do is, and that's it, where we get into difficulty is if you're pushing off muscularly, you're creating friction and abrasion and muscular tension. If you're just lifting the foot off the ground, letting gravity pull you forward, you're just floating over the ground.
And then the center of balance, or that's another part of this.
Right.
Is it hard to talk about without showing people? That must be.
Well, again, Dr. Romanoff had a wonderful demonstration in Miami. He said, you want to learn how to run properly? Run in place. What you do running in place, that's running. If you run in place, you're not landing on your heel. You're not overstriding. And Emil Zatopek, one of the guys I write about in the book, had this fantastic thing he did back in the 1940s. He used to put his dirty laundry in a bathtub with some water and soap. And they'd run in the bathtub on his laundry. And everyone back there was like, oh, Emil, he's so eccentric. No, this guy was a genius. He's practicing proper running form. Because you overstride in a bathtub full of wet laundries, you're going to wake up in the emergency room. And all he was practicing was learning how to lift his foot gently and straight up.
I wanted to get this out of the way. You've resisted arrangements with shoe companies.
Right.
Are you still?
Yes.
Yeah. I have to say, I wonder why. And part of it's pretty obvious, but you know, I keep going back to the lesson that Caballo Blanco told you when you write about in the book how he had been offered finally a sponsorship after all this time. I think it was North Face.
The North Face
came to him and said, "Hey, you know, we'll pay you to endorse our products." And he said this. He said, running isn't about making people buy stuff. Running should be free, man.
Yeah. There's a lot to admire about this guy. And to this day, I still hear from him. And he's as offbeat as always. But, you know, his orientation in terms of ethics is unwavering. My difficulty has been just that. It's funny because I think, man, you know, get a signature shoe, you know. Your days of writing books are over, my friend.
It's true.
But the thing about it is I don't think I can be saying, you know, all shoes are bad except for my shoe, you know. And that's the thing about it.
It's darn ethics thing, right?
Yeah, it's sticky. It's keep me up at night. I don't know. Tell you what, I haven't really frankly felt that much of a temptation because I just don't – there are shoes that I like. And I like to have the freedom of just if I wear a trail shoe one day, Five Fingers the next, this new Ultra I haven't tried, I'm interested in. That's it. I like to have the freedom as opposed to, you know, being locked in with some kind of device, which I may feel is crap.
Let's go back to the phones. Let's see, Randy is with us in Salt Lake. Randy, hi.
Hi. Just wanted to ask the guest if he had any thoughts on everyday walking shoes such as Birkenstocks or just some lightweight handmade moccasins, and also the moccasins for running as with protection for the foot.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Barefoot Ted, and what disturbs me about myself is that Barefoot Ted defines the word eccentric. He's about as offbeat as it gets. And I keep finding myself a couple years later doing the exact same stuff and saying the exact same stuff he does. It really concerns me about where I'm heading in my life. But Barefoot Ted one time gave me a pair of his handmade huaraches. I just put them on to be polite. And I ended up wearing them for a four-hour trail run in the dark, and they felt fantastic. Total shock to me. But again, I think it comes back to the key question. Once your forearm is wired, your feet are going to tell you what they like. You'll try on a pair of huaraches or a moccasin. They feel comfortable. You're good to go.
Thanks for the call. Let's see. Back to the phones. Daniel is with us in Salt Lake City. Daniel, welcome.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
You had talked about in the current coach at Oregon how he had noticed that his runners perhaps were running faster when they went barefoot. Most of the conversation so far has been talking about preventing injury. I was wondering if you could touch on how it affects speed, if people initially slow down or if they speed up.
Oh, that's a good question.
It's a great question, and it's a tricky answer because I think one of the mistakes we've made is we focus on performance. You know, we're not fast animals, and yet we lionize speed, faster, faster, faster. And again, you know, humans as runners are actually surge and recover. You don't want to run like the animal you're hoping is going to die. You want to run a little bit smarter than that. So this focus on speed is something I resist. But to put it in the best terms, if you're not getting hurt, you're training more. And if you're training more, you will run more efficiently and lighter. So you should run much faster.
But, you know, this seems like one of the principal lessons, I have to say, from the book. And it was the lesson you learned from the Tarahumara themselves. And that is, take it easy.
The Tarahumara, again, I've learned so much since the book came out. I just keep meeting people that are educating me on things. But one thing which really came as a light bulb flash to me was, you know, the Tarahumara don't race the way we do. They don't all line up. Someone fires a gun. They all take off for themselves. You know, when we run, the group gets thinner and thinner as the race progresses. When the Tarahumara run, their group is always reforming back into that hunting pack because it's a game where the team wins, not the individual. Mm. So it's not just – again, Caballo gave me this great advice. He said, first, focus on easy because if that's all you get, that ain't so bad. But the Tarahumara run constantly as a pack, and there's something so uplifting and revivifying about being part of a pack. And that's it. It's that sense of community flow, the moving party.
It's interesting. You said off the air at the beginning, we were chatting for a moment, you said you've learned more since the book, really, than before the book.
Yeah, there's been this explosion of information because the people you didn't know are out there. You write the book and suddenly they're out there. Last night, a guy stands up in the crowd. He tells this amazing story about when he was 17 years old. There was a big buck in his neighborhood. He's a farm boy. And he decided he wanted to run this thing down and put a bell around its neck. And he did. He went and chased it. He told his mom, I'll be gone for about 4 or 5 hours. And he runs this thing till it drops over, and he put his hand on it. It bellowed, but it was too exhausted to get up. So he tied a bell around its neck and left it. And you could tell by this guy's face, this is the gospel truth. I never would have heard that story before.
Christopher McDougall, author of Born to Run, A Hidden Tribe, Super Athletes, and the Greatest Race the World Has Never Seen. Christopher, thanks very much.
Oh, my pleasure. It was a blast.
Radio West is a production of KUER News. I'm Doug Fabrizio.